It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
This is Cleveland's Team, a baseball history podcast. A regular look back at professional baseball in Cleveland from 1901 and beyond. Now, here's your host, Guardians Team historian, Jeremy Fedor.
Hey, Guardians fans. We are back with the podcast. It's been a while, but during the season, I was able to sit down with alumni that were in town from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and record some great interviews. Now, this week, we're going to start off with Cleveland's all-time saves leader, Cody Allen, to talk about his career in Cleveland. Hope you enjoy.
Like I was saying, kind of a harmless just going through your career with us and even going back to the beginning. So back high school, I was doing my deep dive, football, baseball, out in Florida. When did baseball kind of stick out to you as your future goal?
I think I kind of knew that baseball was it for me. Not because of, any particular skill set that I had that was more advantageous for baseball than football. Baseball was what I did, since I was four. I started playing football in high school, and I think it was something that I naturally picked up, and I did. I loved it. I still do. But there was just something about baseball that I knew that was kind of my route.
You said you started football in high school, but I was looking at your page, four-year starter at Boone, first playoff win, throwing a touchdown pass in overtime and all that. Were you ever worried then about, hurting your arm or anything of that nature?
You know what? I think there was a brief amount of time there after I signed a letter of intent to University of Central Florida. And there was a little bit, but I think by that time too, I had entrenched myself as a member of that group of guys who was trying to win games and win championships with the football team. And I knew also too that time was going to be coming to an end. And so it was kind of one of those things like, all right, let's play the game. If you get hurt, you're running a little bit of a risk, but I think at the position that I was playing as a quarterback, I think it mitigated a little bit of the risk. But I also knew that if I didn't play, I would definitely regret that.
And you weren't drafted out of high school.
Nope.
So, how many schools were looking at you? Was it just kind of a local thing?
There's a few schools. I ended the recruiting process fairly early. I knew I had a relationship with the coach at UCF. I'd gone to some camps there just with it being local and develop a relationship with he was the pitching coach at the time there. His name was Craig Cozart, and just love the campus, love the ability to be close to home, and my brother, I have a twin brother who was going to school not far away either, so it gave us a chance to remain close, and I kind of knew that that's where I wanted to be. I did explore a few other schools, but we didn't get so deep into the process that it was a wide net, so it was pretty, I think I knew from the get-go that's where I was going to go.
And when you were drafted, it was by Cleveland, and not once, but twice. Did you, the first time, the 16th round, just didn't work out, and then the next year, 23rd?
So up to that first draft, I had gone to UCF for 2 years, and then my second year there, I redshirted. I had Tommy John surgery before the season started. We had a whole new coaching staff, so the coaching staff that had recruited me to come there, the ones that I wanted to play for, they were no longer there. And the staff that was there, they were doing what they believed that they needed to do to revamp the organization. And so they actually let me go of my contract. So my scholarship. And so I went to a junior college right there in Florida. And I was first year back from Tommy John. It was kind of a turbulent year. Had some games where I did pitch really well, but I was not ready. It had nothing to do with Cleveland as an organization or the offer or the whole draft process. I just didn't believe that I was ready to present myself well enough in the professional ranks to give myself a shot at the ultimate goal, which is playing in the big leagues. And so I actually ended up going to High Point University in North Carolina, where the coach that had recruited me to go to UCF, he was now the head coach at High Point. So there was a familiarity there, and I knew exactly that he was the guy that I felt like, you know what, if I want to give this a shot a year later, this is the guy that's going to get me to a position that I'll be ready to go.
And were you surprised that it was Cleveland looking at you again in 11, or was it just like, all right, there's something there?
You know, I didn't think that they would, just because they had drafted me, and I didn't sign. And so, you know, I kind of thought that there was an outside chance that, okay, you know, maybe they – because I had conversations with the scout at the time, Bob Mayer, who he's the one who drafted me at High Point, and I had had conversations with Bob, and there wasn't – he didn't give me any indication that there was any hard feelings or anything there, but I ultimately knew, like, you know, there's a business decision to be made, but you know, he stayed on me, and when they drafted me, I was surprised, but I wasn't as surprised as maybe like my parents was.
And how does that work in the, you know, 23rd round? Is it just a phone call, or is it
he pretty much cut right to it. He's, you know, when the draft happened, he called me. He's like, all right, you know, hey, I know you're a little disappointed, because I was hoping to go a little earlier. He's like, no, you're disappointed, but this is what it is. This is the offer. We're not going to play around like we did last summer. And I was like, cool, let's go. Let's get started. So I signed right away. And I to go back to my decision not to sign, I was comfortable signing right away regardless of what the offer was, just because I felt like I was ready. I felt like I was ready to present myself well enough when I showed up. And I showed up to Mahoning Valley. And signed my contract and got started.
Now, usually people from, you know, Ohio will vacation in Florida. Had you ever been to Ohio or Cleveland, or what were your thoughts besides?
I don't think I'd ever been to Ohio. Maybe when I was a little kid, but I do not think I'd ever been to Ohio. I did, I mean, it was a storied franchise, and there was a lot of between like my agent and some guys that I had played with growing up, like they're, you know, the organization as a whole from a development side was very well respected. And so I was very excited to start my career with this organization that had a reputation for developing and using their talent at the big league level. You know, there's a lot of other organizations that maybe are in bigger markets that they, you know, they explore the free agent market or whatever it is. But I knew that this organization was dependent upon that farm system to win games at the big league level. And I was definitely excited to be here.
And your parents immediately became the biggest Cleveland fans. And
Everybody. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We they definitely had the sweatshirts and the hats and the polos and everything before the summer was over.
And, you know, 2011, 2012, you kind of burned through the minors. I think Baseball Reference mentioned 65 minor league games. Do you ever feel like LeBron skipping college and going right to the majors? Was it kind of tough to acclimate, kind of like bouncing around like that? Or?
You know, I think at that point, you're just playing the game, you know. And you know, there was really – every level you went up, it was super exciting. Like, I knew what was going on. And I was very – thankful and grateful for like those previous experiences, and for the coaches at each one of those levels, and for the teammates that I had, because all those experiences, you know, they all culminated and they all helped my development. But I was also very thankful that the organization at that point, like they believed that I was ready, because, you know, I had seen other guys in other organizations that they were doing the same thing that I was doing, but it was just kind of far-fetched for somebody to move quickly like that. And so they were just like, you know what, we'll just let this guy, you know, just like mature or develop at this level for a little bit longer, and then maybe they get stale and they just, or they become bitter or whatever it was. And I definitely didn't want to do that, or didn't want that to happen. but the organization never allowed it to. They were just like, hey, we're just going to continue to challenge this guy and see if he's up to the task. And there's a few individuals at the time that I think were definitely behind that, and they gave me their vote of confidence. And they just kept bumping me. And Mike Sarbaugh, he was my AAA manager in Columbus, and that was kind of the first roadblock I hit in that, you know, I guess, road up to the big leagues. And he was just like, dude, just shake it off, keep going. And a couple months later, I was here.
So you don't ever look back at those missing out long bus rides and all that stuff?
No.
Yeah, so by July 20th, your MLB debuted. Do you remember, I guess it would have been Sarbaugh calling you in his office?
Yeah, it was. It was Mike Sarbaugh. He called me in and just didn't really know. You know, didn't prank me or anything. He was just like, hey, man, you're going up. And I just kind of asked him, I was like, what do I do? You know, I mean, I did not feel ready, but he was just like, man, just, it's the same game. You know, the mound is still 60 feet away, and the guy's still holding the bat, and the strike's on the same size. It's good to keep doing what you've been doing.
And, you know, with that, most guys I've talked to, usually when they get to the majors, there's guys they had played with in the minors already there. But, I mean, again, you were in the minors for a cup of coffee. Who did you kind of gravitate to, or do you have anyone that took you under their wing?
You know what? There was one guy on the team that I played with in AAA that year. It was Zach McAllister, and he was up. And then there was another guy who I really looked up to, a guy, Joe Smith, who we had the same agent, and I'd come across him. I'd pitch in a couple games in spring training, and I'd met Joe and chatted with him a few times through our agent, just some functions and those games in spring training, and he was in the bullpen at the time. He was kind of the veteran presence down there, and he had also had a very similar kind of rise to the big leagues. He was very young, straight out of college, and he went to a team that was very seasoned in the New York Mets at the time. And so Joe was definitely a guy that I leaned on, where it's like, hey man, I'm not gonna fool you here or try and fake it. Like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing right now. And he was just like, you just stay over there. You know, kinda, he definitely guided me and helped me learn the ropes.
So was 37 just what, you know, Tony gave you, or is that
just what they gave me?
Meaning to it?
No, just what they gave me.
Changing it, or
no?
All right. Now, do you remember that debut and or is it all like a blur? Or I mean, that's not.
Oh no, I remember the debut. I do remember the debut. I was against Baltimore, and I just remember, you know, kind of having those moments of like, what the heck am I doing here? You know, kind of thing. And Derek Lowe started that game. And D'Lo, you know, he started getting hit around a little bit, and they called down, and you know, I knew as soon as the phone rang, I knew it was for me, and so, and it was one of those things where the adrenaline's pumping so fast, I didn't need to warm up, like I was ready, and they brought me in, and yeah, first guy I faced, Matt Wieters, and ended up walking him. The next guy, Wilson Bediment, ended up walking him, and then Mark Reynolds ended up punching him out. And so once I got the first out, you know, it was like, okay, like it's doable, you know, it's doable, these guys are human. Then I was able to settle in a little bit.
Do you have that first strikeout ball still?
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think. Now, was it almost better to come in a blowout situation like that? I mean, is that, or it matter, first start's your first start?
It doesn't matter. I think at that particular time, I mean, the gravity of the score or whatever it was, I didn't have the court awareness in that moment to even think about that stuff. Like, I remember looking up from the mound when Matt Wieters stepped in the box, and I felt like I was pitching from center field. And I was merely just trying to hold it together. Like, I was just like, just throw it over the plate. Like, that's all I was trying to do. I just didn't want to, honestly, I just didn't want to embarrass myself. And so the score could have been 1-1. It could have been 10-0. I wouldn't even have known.
Were your parents able to make it to that game?
They did. They literally, they had booked a flight, and the earliest they could get in was, I think it was like close to game time, and from the rental car and like all this stuff, they got to the stadium as I was warming up on the field. And so they came in and they said that they were walking up like Eagle Avenue. and they hear over the Jumbotron my, like, they like announce me, and they just like start running in. So it was kind of cool.
Over the course of your career, you had quite a few catchers, two or a couple of them. You were with Santana towards the end of his catching career.
Yeah.
And what can you say about the guys, Perez, Gomes, Jimenez, as catchers?
I was really fortunate. I was extremely fortunate to have all those guys. Carlos, he kind of walked me through, my first year, playing. And then, Lou Martian was also there, who's a guy. But I developed a very good relationship with Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez. But having both of those guys for the bulk, pretty much my entire career here, and then obviously Jimenez was here for a period of time as well, but I'd say probably 85 to 90% of the games that I pitched in a Cleveland uniform, Yan or Roberto caught. I couldn't have asked for two better catchers. I mean, those guys, they did their homework. They knew me. And I trusted them explicitly. And they obviously, and too, they're very good. I think Roberto's got a couple gold gloves at home for a reason.
Roberto, too, just like yourself, kind of later draft pick.
I got a chance to pitch to Roberto, too, at two different minor league levels as well. So,
you come in 2012. It's kind of a turning point, I guess, in that decade, and I think a big point in our history. Because that August, for worse, the wheels kind of fall off. The club goes, and it was like 5-something.
Yep.
For you being a new guy, was that something that you just kind of kept in the wings? Like, oh, shit, like things aren't great? Or like, how did you navigate that?
Like you said, like, we went on a road trip. So I was here for a homestand where we split. We had 3 against Baltimore and 3 against Detroit, and we split. And then we went on the road for a 10-gamer. And we went 0-10. And on that 10-gamer is when, I think Johnny Damon gets released. Derek Lowe gets released. I think at the end of that road trip is when Manny Acta got fired. And so there's a lot of going on. And I was, but for me, I was merely just trying to keep my head about me. And just my goal was just to stay there. And so, I didn't have the court awareness of exactly what was going on to understand, the ramifications of everything that was happening. I was merely just trying to, be ready for the next day. But at the same time, when all these guys were getting let go and all these moves were getting made, Corey Kluber gets brought up, and, all these other guys that I had played with in the minor leagues and had relationships with, they were all starting to make their own presence felt in the clubhouse. And so, it's kind of bittersweet for me because we were losing games and guys were losing their jobs. But at the same time, this kind of next wave of players was coming in that we were all trying to figure out together if we were big leaguers or not, basically.
And that kind of brings me to another point is, it seems like it was that wave of new guys coming up. And you kind of had a front row seat then for the next few years to watch guys like, Kluber really become one of the top pitchers in franchise history. I mean, that stretch he had was phenomenal, and got to see a little guy named Jose Ramirez, kind of come out of nowhere, a Kip Masterson. What was it like to kind of be around those guys and really watch a lot of them develop into, stars?
So the guys that were here before me, so it was like Lonnie Chisenhall, Jason Kipnis, Carlos Santana, they weren't, especially Kip and Lonnie, they were kind of like just getting, entrenched in the big leagues. And then Santana was a little bit before them. But then the next guys, like Kluber had a little bit of a taste in 2011. He got called up. McAllister was up. And then, we make the trade that offseason for Mike Avilas and Yan Gomes. And so it was really cool to kind of see this, in hindsight, see it all come together. Now, at the time, like, these are singular moves that you're not even really thinking about. It's just like, these are players that are coming to us. But then over time, another guy, I don't know how we can forget about this guy, but Michael Brantley, he's a young guy at the time. He hasn't even signed his contract yet. And so Josh Tomlin. I mean, so there's so many guys that were there that we were all kind of like, where do we sit or where do we stand in the organization and in the league as a whole? And then we were all so fortunate to be together for the next 5, 6, 7 years. And then to experience some of the things we experienced at the end of that, winning 3 straight divisions and winning a pennant. So at the time, we had no idea what was happening. But, you know, we look back on it in 17 and 18, and we were like, man, it was like we've all been here for a really long time together.
And that off season, you know, the managerial hirings are coming. Did you hear rumblings that Tito was possible, or were you just kind of, hey, I'm gonna see what happens?
You know, I didn't know. Honestly, you know, I love Tito to death, but at the time, like, I knew Sandy, and I knew Sandy was the other guy up for the job. It was basically between Tito and Sandy, and so me personally, I was like, man, I really hope Sandy gets this job, because I don't know Tito, right. And I know Sandy knows me. I know Sandy had confidence in me at the end of the season the year before. And I think the world of Sandy. And so I was kind of hoping Sandy got the job. And then Terry Francona got the job. And, you know, and we all came to love Tito. And you know, he's done amazing things here that, you know, will just be etched in the franchise's history. But, yeah, it was kind of a wild off season.
What makes Tito such a great manager, in your opinion?
I think, obviously, he knows the game. But I think the biggest thing is he understands people. He knows people. And he's a master communicator, right? I think he's able to get guys to understand what we're really doing here, right? And I would say the biggest takeaway that I took from him was, as a player, was never to focus on the results of the game. It's always like, let's just develop a really good process, and let's just focus on that process and enjoy what we're doing within that process, right? So enjoy coming to the ballpark, right? Like, don't stress out on the fact that we're facing X guy, or we're facing these teams, or you're not pitching well right now, or you're not hitting well right now. Let's just focus on the process, and let's just enjoy it, and do it together.
And, you know, that next season, you have Tito, you know, things seem to be coming together. It seems like Jason Giambi was a great addition to the team, just in terms of a veteran. Now, for you, you know, your legs were probably more settled than they were when you came out. Did you ever, I mean, and again, I'm not sure how much a 23, 24-year-old guy cared about, you know, if you're in Fenway and you're standing on the same mound as greats, or was that something that, you know, was cool for you, or is it just another ballpark for you to go around?
No, it was definitely those places, you know, Fenway, and I know it wasn't the old Yankee Stadium, but it was Yankee Stadium, right? Like, there's just something about those places, right? You're just kind of taken aback. You know, even like I remember being in Houston, and you know, that ballpark isn't particularly historical or anything like that, but I remember Craig Biggio was there throwing out the first pitch, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's Craig Biggio. And, you know, having the same thing. I remember being in Yankee Stadium when they were retiring Andy Pettit's number. And I was like, holy smokes. That's it. Like, just being absolutely taken aback. And then kind of looking around like, what are we doing here? You know, kind of thing. And just, like, understanding, you know, and just having that moment of gratitude. And I think that's all it was. And, you know, it wasn't just me. It was like, I remember being in Yankee Stadium and they're, you know, it's like a day game, and guys get there early, and we're on the top step, like in the visiting dugout, watching this ceremony take place when we could be inside playing cards or getting ready or whatever. But we're all just like, just gawking and just kind of starstruck by some of the individuals we see out there. You know, like, I got Mariano's there and Jeter's there and all these guys, and you're just like, holy smokes. And so you're just kind of paying homage to, you know, just where you are and who, you know, who came before you. And, you know, and a guy like Jason Giambi, having him on your team kind of puts those things in perspective.
Yeah, you just missed Tomy, because Tomy was up here in 11. And but was there moments of, like, surrealness when you're on the mound and, you know, Miggy's in the box or anything like that?
So there were two moments in my career where I was standing on the mound, and it was kind of this, like, oh, my gosh, like, this guy's in the – like, it was like, this guy's in the box. And it was the first time I faced Miggy. And when I faced Jeter. And both of those moments, it was like, what am I doing here? And, you know, so, yeah, like having those guys. And my debut was against Baltimore. Tomy was on that team. But I just didn't face him that night. But, yeah, I remember walking out to the bullpen that first night, walking from the dugout with the rest of the bullpen to the bullpen, and seeing Adam Jones up close, and Chris Davis, and Jim Tomy, and all these, and they're massive dudes. And I'm just like, what in the heck is going on? Like, but yeah, seeing Tomy was kind of like a.
I think Tomy had hit the home run off Lowe to knock him out, and then that's when you game. And what was about Miggy? I was going through some of your splits, and Miggy, 7-for-19 against you. What made him hard to, I mean, just one of the greatest hitters of all time.
Yeah, he's just so good. Yeah. And, I mean, he's just, you know, and I think, too, like, just the fact that you knew he was that good, like, and he knew he was that good. And he's, I don't know. But there was, it was weird, though, because there'd be, like, a year where I had him. And then the next year, he owned me. And then the next year, I had him. And then the next year, he owned me. So he made adjustments. Like, he, you know, you couldn't fool him too many times the same way. And, but yeah, he was just, he's so good.
I know Raji is here with you. He was only 1-for-7 against you.
I don't know. That was an infield hit, too.
Oh, you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So 13, you know, there's something about Tito's teams and these win streaks. So finish off the season with a 10-game win streak. Giambi had that mammoth home run, and then just the you remember much about that wild card game of disappointment? I mean, was that pretty?
Yeah, cool? I remember Alex Cobb being really good. I remember he was really good. But I remember it was kind of a, you know, I remember Danny Salazar starting that game, and you know, and I remember, you know, unfortunately I know Danny, you know, he got bit by the injury bug there, but I remember thinking, you know, and there were a lot of guys on the team, like, we were really excited for the future of that team. And because it was, you know, you looked around the field, you saw, you know, Jason Kipnis at second base. You know, like, Jose Ramirez was like a young 20-year-old pinch runner on that team. We all knew he was going to be really good. I don't think anybody knew he was going to be as good as he is, but we knew he was going to be good. And, you know, just like some really good players on that team. You know, Kluber was, you know, like, he was really good that year. That was the year before he won the Cy Young. And we kind of knew that we still had a shot at winning that game and making some noise in the postseason, but we all kind of saw it as like, all right, this is kind of like our launching point. Mm-hmm. And then the next 2 years were obviously just disappointing. At that moment, you know, Danny Salazar's on the mound, and we kind of just like, man, we got Kluber, we got this guy. And we're just like, we got a shot to be really good. And so that was, we lost that game, which hurt, but I think there was also an air of like, this is just the beginning.
I was trying to find it. I thought I had your first save written down, but do you remember
Detroit?
I mean, was that
Mother's Day,
something that's, you know, you thought going into the majors, like, you know, I got what it takes to be a closer. I mean, that's a special breed to be a closer. Is that just something that
I never thought about it. I never thought about closing because I'd never done it. Like, in college, I was a starter all the way through, and then in the minor leagues, you know, there's really no, you know, until maybe AAA, there's no set closers role. There's kind of just like, hey, let's just go get outs, right? And, you know, you're hoping that you play yourself into a role where you're just a dependable, reliable option in big-time situations. And that's all you can ask for as a bullpen guy, is that your manager trusts you enough to when stuff starts to hit the fan, you're the guy that he wants to go down there and grab. And so that's why, I mean, toward, you know, end of my career, you know, we had arguably – at the time, he was the best reliever in baseball, and Andrew Miller, and he wasn't closing games for us. It doesn't mean that he wasn't the best player on our team or the best reliever in our bullpen or the best reliever in baseball, you know, because he was the guy that when it was time to win a game in that situation, Tito was calling, you know, we used to joke around. We were like, remember the old Staples commercials where they hit the easy button, you know, that's what he was. But, you know, that was every guy's goal, is to be that.
You know, 16 rolls around. Now, was it, I'm just spitballing, but the Royals from 14 and 15, two World Series, was that helpful to see them that much and be like, why not us? Or is nothing that...
You know, I don't think we thought about it that way. I think we did think about it in the way of, we used to beat these guys a lot, right? And we've seen these guys. Like, if you're looking at it from an individual perspective, they had a good team. They had a really good team. They had really good players. But the difference between when they were really good and when they weren't making the postseason wasn't a huge difference in the addition or subtraction of players. It was just merely in the culture that they had created. Where, you know, I will say, I mean, when we played them in 14 and 15, it didn't matter, like, what the score was. Like, you knew that they were just coming. Like, it was like teams played them, you were playing them, and you were on your heels the entire night. And they just brought the game to you. And so it wasn't the fact that, you know, they went and, you know, I know they traded for some guys. They went and got James Shields and Wade Davis and you know, Salvador Perez getting, you know, starting to get into his prime, and Hosmer and Moustakas and Kane, all these guys, they were getting better. But they just, and Omar Infante was a big part of that, but they just put you on your heels. And it was like, and it's not like, I mean, we got the same guys. We have the same quality players. They're just playing the game a little bit differently than we are right now. And I think seeing that and recognizing that and bringing in guys like Mike Napoli and Rajay Davis and guys who had been around, they kind of helped us see that too.
Now, playoffs roll around. You get the last out against Detroit to clinch the Central, and then you roll into the playoffs. Are you aware you gave up Ortiz's last major league hit?
No, I was his last at bat. I walked him.
Well, in game one, he had that double, too, in the sad. I think that was his only hit in the playoffs.
Was it?
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think that was his last. I'm like 99% sure, because I remember wondering what baseball too. Went.
He absolutely slacked that ball.
And that was bottom. Oh no, it wasn't bottom. That was earlier in the game, right?
It was the eighth. It was in the eighth inning. Yeah.
So you had to do double duty in the ninth, and you had Pedroia on that weird. He didn't think he
check
swung.
Swing,
and
yeah.
He was arguing. And then I remember watching that from a distance. What was, you know, game one against Boston on the ropes like that? Was that again one of those moments where you're like, are you just like three outs, man?
Yeah, so it was definitely different than just three outs, but I will say that when we won that game, like winning that game and like taking the advantage away, the rest of the series is completely different. But going in, like obviously they had to come to our place and play, but I would say that they were confident. Like, they were very confident. Like, they had the experience, you know. They had a great team. I think their offense that year was one of the better ones in history. You know, you're talking about, like, Mookie Betts is on the team. I mean, they were really good. But beating them the way we beat them, it definitely kind of gave us a blueprint of, like, all right, like, this is how we're going to do it. And, you know, so it's set up. And then the next night, you know, we go and we beat them 6-0. And then we go to Boston and beat them. So it was yeah, it was. They were good. They were a really good team. But we knew going into that series, like there's a way that we can win this.
And you knew Pedroia swung too, right? I mean, that was clear as day. Or
I mean, I tell you what, man, he was tough because he was just one of those players, man. Like if you had to draw, and I'm sure, like if Tito had to list like his guys that he's just gonna draw examples from all the time, like 90% of the examples that he gives is gonna be from that particular guy. But he just literally never gave a pitch away. Like, you just could not take a pitch for granted with him, like, ever. And he just battled, man. And, you know, at that stage in the game, like, I think I was, like, 40 pitches in, you know, and the longer you draw this out, you know, it can get hairy. And so I knew I had to come after him, but I also knew, like, I couldn't just give in and say, here it is, like, you know, I'm going to beat you, because that's where you get beat.
And Dope wins that first series. That next series against Toronto, again, also another high-octane offense. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to, I think it was game two, you had Edwin and Batista and Tulowitzki to, I think it was to end the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a murderer's row to some extent, too, especially those guys in that era. Same thing, just get out there. And were you actually aware, go back a little bit, that Tito was going to do what he did with, like, hey, it's – what, sixth inning, bring in Miller, and just, hey, if we need you, we need you?
I think we were definitely aware just to, like, be ready. And I knew he also told us, like, hey, I'm not going to, like, catch you guys off guard, right? Like, I'm going to give you a heads up, because I think Tito did a really good job of breaking the game down into, like, sections. And so with Boston, right, like, everything evolved around, like, Ortiz, right? Like, we've got to make sure that we handle Ortiz. And so, obviously, he's going to track Ortiz with Miller. Mm-hmm. So if he knows, like, hey, Ortiz is last at bat in the third inning, we're definitely not going to let him come up again with guys on. So, like, if it's the fourth inning and Ortiz may come up, you know, say he's supposed to do up fifth in the fifth inning, he's going to let Miller know, like, hey, if we get to him, you've got him. And he's going to let him know that well in advance. And so that was one thing that he did a really good job of. And then the same thing with, like, in Toronto with me with Donaldson. He was like, hey, we're just, you know, because there was like a string of righties there with, you know, I think Donaldson was hitting in the two hole. And it was Donaldson, Edwin, but or I'm sorry, Donaldson, Edwin, Batista, and Tulowitzki. It's just like, hey, we're just not going to let them get there, right? And so there was a game in the Toronto series where me and Miller flip-flopped, mm-hmm. where I came in early because we were in that string of righties there. And then Russell Martin was on that team. So, I mean, they had a bunch of righties that they could leverage. So he did a really good job of communicating like his intent and how he was going to use us so that we could kind of track along with him as well too.
And I guess to backtrack a little more, because leading into that postseason, like Carrasco took the comebacker, yeah. and Brantley was out, and I think it's Hoynsey that had the article saying, like, oh, it's over before a game. Was that big for you as a motivator, too, or did you not need that as baseball?
Well, it could have gone either way, but fortunately we had a guy named Mike Napoli on our team who literally just, like, doesn't. I remember when Bauer cut his hand.
Yeah.
You know? And he just – I remember guys were looking to him like, what the heck, man? Like, how are we going to, like, overcome this? And he was just like, we'll figure it out. Like, and when he said it, it wasn't, like, lip service. It was like – you looked at him, and the way he said it, it was like, we'll figure it out. Like, and, we, you know, and then Ryan Merritt comes up and throws, you know, like, 4 2/3, one hit. It was like – but, it, you know, when that happened, you know, looking back on it, it was like – man, this guy's been in Arizona throwing sim games. Like, no knock against Ryan Merritt. Yeah. Like, he was a quality big leaguer, great starter. But it's not like he was getting work against, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays or the Boston Red Sox or whoever. He was throwing sim games, and he shows up to clinch the pennant, and no problem.
You didn't – I know most of the city of Cleveland, they bust up off his wedding. Did you guys buy anything on this?
Yeah, no, it was sold out by the time we looked at it.
So obviously, you know, the World Series didn't end up the way, you know, we all had hoped it would. But, mm-hmm. I mean, just as an experience to go through all that, how long did it take to fully set in? Like, that was probably one of the most historic World Series. I mean,
you know, I still think about it, mm-hmm. from time to time. And not as much as I used to. But I think it's one of those things that until you get far enough away from it, you can't really grasp,
right.
you know, what it was or like the weight of it. And I'm so thankful for, you know, it sucked. But yeah, it sucked.
Yeah.
It sucked. But I will say that, like, I remember after it, I remember doing an interview, you know, for all the, you know, local media and all that stuff. And I remember feeling so excited about the next season. And I just remember, like, I was like, let's go home for a week and let's go straight to Arizona, because it was the most fun stretch of baseball I'd had since I was 12 years old. So, you know, and unfortunately we never got back and we didn't do the same thing, but I just remember feeling this great sense of, like, pride in the group and in the city itself, because, you know, like, it, the city represented itself extremely well there. But the group, you know, for all the adverse situations that we had had, and, you know, and just the way that everybody had handled the attention, and nobody was, you know, the moment wasn't too big for anybody. Everybody, like, there was this constant, you know, kind of message of, like, we, you know, this constant, like, you know, deflection of, you know, any type of, you know, if somebody's trying to brag on somebody, they would just deflect it to the next guy. And I don't know, there's just a lot of pride in that team and how it handled everything that happened.
You guys had LeBron on his feet. You know, that's pretty wild.
Yeah. So.
I know we're running out of time, but I do want to touch on the, you know, in 17, then you guys ended up doing something that might never be repeated in baseball. Again, that 22-game win streak. I mean, again, as that's going on, just something you're living in the moment and thinking, hey, this is something, or I mean...
You know, it's funny because I remember, so the year before we won 14 in a row to kind of really put some distance between us and Detroit and, like, really give us, and that was like the moment where it was like, we're going to win this thing. We're going to win the division and we're going to go make some noise. And I remember in 17, you know, we go and we sign Edwin in the offseason, we get Boone Logan, and, you know, we're looking at our team on paper and you're like, we are loaded. And we were all pumped. And then we get to the All-Star break that year and it's like, we're like, four games over 500 or something like that, and the Twins are barking on our heels. And I remember us having kind of like little team meetings and stuff like that. And I was like, we this has to be like on a daily basis. We've got to show them we've got to win series. We can't bank on a 14-game win streak. We just can't bank on that happening, guys. And then we go run off 22 in a row, and it was like, oh, I guess so.
And then, again, you know, the franchise is over 100-some-odd years, and I know the game of baseball has changed. You know, guys in 1912 weren't looking for saves. Mm-hmm. So to become the all-time winning – or have the most saves in franchise history, what does that mean now – or then and now and just, as over your career?
I mean, it is something – I'm definitely proud of, right? It's something that, I take pride in. But at the same time, I think it was a huge testament to the teams that I was on, the guys that I got to play with, right? Like Brian Shaw, right? Like, you're only getting to the ninth in those situations because of guys like Brian Shaw and Zach McAllister and Nick Goody and Dan Otero and, like, all of these guys that just pitch their tails off. And then you talk about our starting rotation for days, you know, all the great pitchers that came through here. But, like, I was merely just a small cog in a wheel. And I just happened to have a stat attached to my part of the cog, right? Like, and so I don't know. It's just I'm definitely proud of it, but I think it's a collective statistic.
You never had a desire to wear 99, like, cut
my hair and come out? No, I didn't.
That was what comes to being a closer in Cleveland, it seems.
Dude, I tell you what, man. I mean, we're talking about this record right now, but the guy that's here right now, he is really, really good. And he's very young, and he's got a shot at saving a lot of games. I think for him, too, I think he, you know, would say the same thing. Like, it's a collective effort. You know, you don't get to the ninth with a minimum lead by either the guys in front of you blowing it or, you know, your team not scoring runs or your starters not staying in the game. Like, it's a collective statistic.
Now, when you went to L.A., you never had a chance to face Cleveland, did you?
No.
So you never had to face Hosey?
Never came back, no.
He had been, you know, as a pitcher, I mean, you got to watch Hosey on a daily basis. Do you think he would have been aggravating to pitch against?
He was so frustrating because, like, he's almost like Miggy in the sense of, like, man, there's no set way to get this guy out. Like, there's really no set way to get him out. You just hopefully make quality pitches, and then he just gets himself out because there's nothing that he can't do with a bat. And, you know, like, we saw it for years, and I was like, we used to joke. We're like, what do you think the other team's pitchers' meetings are like when they go over this guy? I remember talking to catchers, you know, James McCann. He was like, you know, he was catching for Detroit at the time. He was like, I hate Jose Ramirez. Like, we can't figure this out. I was like, dude, you and everybody else.
Is it wild now to be on this other side of your baseball life? I mean, when you were playing, you probably saw older guys coming in and going and didn't think too much of it. And now you're coming back and feel pretty cool, though, to have this.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely I really appreciated the guys that came before me. And, you know, getting to see guys like, you know, Mike Jackson and Jim Tomey and Baerga, and, you know, all these guys, right? Like Rafi Perez and, you know, and the guys that just, you know, like took care of the game, right? And hopefully, you know, the guys that are playing now, hopefully they feel like I did my part in taking care of the game. But I'm grateful and I'm thankful to be back here to just help represent the organization that they're very much the face of. I think it's a great game. I think it's a great organization. I think the players now are so good. I think the talent level of players is just remarkable. And it's a hard game. It is a really, really hard game. And for those guys to go out there and put it on the line every day, it's not easy.
Well, I know we have to get you out of here soon. No, I'm over time, so I'll cut it there. But
you've been listening to Cleveland's Team, a baseball history podcast with Guardians team historian Jeremy Fedor.